Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Miles, We are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a writer, speaker, activist, best-selling author who works on issues of race and identity in America. Her new book is Be a Revolution, How Everyday People Are Fighting Oppression and Changing the World, and How You Can Too. Please welcome to the show the brilliant, the talented, Ijeoma Oluwa!
Welcome. How you doing?
Welcome.
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing great. We're doing great. It's great to have you. We just finished your book. We're very excited to talk about it and pick your brain and ask you questions, but not make you do any of the extra labor that sometimes you're asked to do in other spaces. Obviously, we want this to be a free-flowing conversation, but yeah. I also have to say you are from Seattle, and the first thing I always say to every person from Seattle is, Dick's, ain't it great? Aren't the fries great? And you came with it and said it was part of your very substantial moment in your life on your wedding. So I'm glad to hear that we have that in common just to start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's all you need. Mm-hmm.
You don't, because Dick's are, Miles has very specific taste in French fries that he likes them.
The texture.
Medium rare.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he likes soggy mashed potato sticks. Is that?
Don't need matchsticks, no.
Yeah. Is that always your preferred type of French fry or just Dick's? There's something about Dick's.
Yeah, no. I like all different types of fries. No, there aren't fries like Dick's anywhere else. Like there's a Dick's fry and then you can't get it anywhere else. But it is a particular kind of soft, very greasy, salty thing that's beautiful. But it actually tastes like real potato where a lot of French fries don't because it is just real potato. You can watch them chopping them up and tossing them in the fryer. But yeah, it's a really specific thing. But no, I like French fries other places. But when you want a Dick's French fry, you can't go anywhere else. That's all there is.
Yeah. Love it up there. Love it up there. Beautiful. We've got it all. And a great music scene.
Well, we are going to dig into your book and just all the work, your expertise. But first, before we get to that, we do like to get to know our guest a little bit better. And ask, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are or what you're up to?
The other day, I was trying to figure out what happened to Seal.
Oh, the singer.
Like the singer? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think like Heidi Klum showed up in my feed. Yeah. And then I was thinking, what happened to Seal? And my partner was like, oh, did he die? And I said, I don't think he died. And so I spent a good amount of time. I don't know. He just seems happy. He was recently at like his sister, I think, or his cousin had a film release and he came and brought kids. Yeah, he seems happy. I don't know. Perfect. So yeah, that's... For me, a lot of times it's random things popping up into my head of, you know, what happened to this person that, right. you know, that used to be a part of my life. I was thinking about Jimon Hounsou the other day, too. Maybe it's just like really beautiful black men, you know, right. that popped up in like the 90s. And I'm like, where did they go? What happened to them?
Yeah. What happened to Jimon Hounsou? What's he doing? I mean, he's always popping up in movies all the time. And then like sometimes in roles, I'm like, Jimon, you... I felt like sometimes you look, it's Hollywood. You do all kinds of roles. But yeah, I'm trying to think of what the last thing I saw him in was.
Yeah, I'm trying to think he was I saw him in something just a few years ago, but it was like a really bit part with some futuristic like space thing, I think I remember.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like he got typecast so bad. You know, I mean, we're like the 90s and
yeah,
you know, of like he was only going to do like this trauma porn or. He was so exotified because of his looks and right. his accent. And I just think that they really put him into a corner that made it hard for him to get out of. And, you know, and I think he has said the same. Like, I think I remember some quotes from interviews in the past being like, yeah, he was absolutely typecast. But, you know, my favorite memory of him is always going to be the Janet Jackson video, because that's really where I just watched that on repeat, you know, in my little like preteen hormonal, like, explosion of like,
yeah,
who is this incredibly beautiful human being, and just watched it over and over again.
Love will never do without you. We know mm-hmm. that. We know that, Jimon or Jimon. Mm-hmm. Weren't people calling him Jimon too?
Yeah.
And I know another person. Like, I remember I went to school with someone who called him Digimon.
I heard that a couple times. Yeah. I remember people being like, yeah,
it's not digital monsters, the cartoon.
I know.
Man, you know what? Yeah. I think part of the reason that like Seal's kind of hard to search online. I searched Seal Urban Legend and they were like, okay, is breaking the seal a real thing when you're out drinking? And I just feel like it's a very specific, but Seal is 60 and thriving and touring.
Yeah.
Last time Google checked in with him.
Last tweet he had was he's playing Redondo Beach Life Festival. This May through May 3rd weekend with Sting, Incubus, Devo, Fleet Foxes. This is a real interesting lineup.
Wow.
I feel like he should get higher billing. He's like on the third line.
I'm like, it feels right. Yeah.
I just want to know what crowd is going, like right. what, how people are mixing, like, oh, we got your Fleet Foxes. We got your Sting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, I can see whatever the Venn diagram is between Sting and Seal being very annoying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I would have voted for Obama a third term if I could.
And
yeah, I feel like.
And then you add the Fleet Foxes in too. And then that Venn diagram becomes pretty
blown
insufferable.
Out. Yeah, there are three separate circles suddenly.
Yeah. Oh, no. What is something from your search history?
Well, guess who prepared for the first time ever?
Not you.
No, it was me. It was me. I did.
Okay.
I was going to guess that, but Miles guessed not you.
I was like, no, not you. Don't
Somebody
tell
else.
Me that. Don't tell me that.
All I do is look at TikTok now. Mm-hmm. And my latest search on TikTok was for cool animals.
Oh, you're I so love cool animals.
High. I love that shit. Hey, cool animals.
And whenever it shows me too many people, I like talk to it. I'm like, show cute, funny animals.
And what do you got? Did you see anything new?
A binturong.
A what?
A binturong.
Binturong.
Look it up. You ever seen a binturong? They're so cute and weird. They are.
Wow. It's like a little, like a raccoon thing.
Yeah, it's a cool animal.
Wow. Binturong. Okay, well, actually, we don't do mystical songs, but wow.
Me, looking up binturongs all day.
Little binturong cute
babies. See, this is what
TikTok. So I just asked the TikTok of my generation, Google, for cool animals, and they didn't give me shit.
Yeah, Google sucks now.
Yeah,
I will say, actually, the Google image search has been ruined by AI. Have you guys noticed this?
Yeah.
If you look for something now, you can look for anything on Google image search, which used to be good. And now all it shows you is AI generated images from all these free AI generating sites that is like, oh, you wanted to see like a picture of like Jesus drinking a cup of coffee? Here's like 100 AI generated, you know, you can use them.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
You can hardly find the real picture of Jesus drinking a cup of coffee.
Jesus working as barista. Let's see.
But yeah, this shit is all real basic. They don't have Binturong. Is that what it is? Binturong?
Yeah, Binturong.
Oh, shit. Yeah, like open art?
Yeah,
they really did just serve me a fucking dumbass picture of a guy with great hair and a beard with a just working on something.
Yeah, that's what happens. It just shows you this open AI thing where it's like, oh, you want to see this thing? We'll make it for you and then you can use it for free. And they're all terrible. They're all terrible AI combinations of like images.
In this one, Jesus is wearing heavy eyeliner for some reason.
Because you wear eyeliner in the desert to keep it out of your eyes. Keep the sweat out of your eyes.
Exactly.
Oh, it makes sense to me. Yeah.
Earliest form of eye black was just thick eye makeup for Jesus. But obviously,
a lot of people don't know Jesus was rocking eye black out there in the desert. You know,
like John Randall, the Viking
like
style,
just
all over his face. Another washed reference for them out there. Come on,
AJ, what's something you think is overrated?
All right, for this one, I decided to do this. The biggest argument I've had in my family in the last week, which was I was saying how much I enjoy watching movies on double speed. And my wife and kids were just furious. So my overrated is watching movies at regular speed. And because, I wanted to see Flowers of the Killer Moon, but I just did not want to spend 4 hours doing that. So I rented it on YouTube and you can put it on double speed. And it was fantastic.
The way it was meant to be seen by a white man at double speed.
On my iPhone.
Yeah, on an iPhone, on the toilet.
Yes, I'm sorry. I know, maybe.
And the experience was like...
Well, I still felt emotions. I just felt them faster. I just,
They're just flying at you.
Yeah,
my argument is I'm a writer and I'm not going in and yelling at people who skim my books or saying
you read
too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, do what you want. Here's my book. Do
engage
with it what
with
you
it.
Want.
Right, right, right.
So, but yeah, I know that my filmmakers and art and are on my family side that this is a terrible thing. But I mean, no offense. I listen to you on double speed. And
to
I enjoy
for
it.
The show. Yeah. Why not? I mean, I think it's all I do that with like I watch a lot of reality TV. And sometimes I can get through it faster by watching it at 1.5x speed. Like, because there's so much dramatic pausing that when you actually condense the information down, you're like, oh, yeah, great. I got the gist of that inane content pretty quickly. But without.
Oh, yeah. No, if you cut out the repeats and then say, and then let's remember what happened before the commercial break. Like, there's literally like 8 minutes,
10 minutes of actual new stuff. Right.
That's right.
That's interesting. I've never tried to watch a movie at 2x speed. I've listened to books at 2x speed, and some of them I'm like, flying through, getting everything. And sometimes it's like too dense, and I just do not like. I'm 30 minutes in, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck just happened here. Like,
Well, there are some shows and movies definitely you don't like. Veep. I remember I tried to watch that at double speed and I was like, what the hell is going on? Because they are so fast and witty. But like a slow movie that's, lots of nature shots, like you mentioned. I can deal with that.
That's probably some kind of like speed comprehension test is to like take like a Tina Fey written show or IP and watch that as like 3x speed to be like, did you catch all that? Can right. you?
That's how that she picks her writers. Actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She makes them
watch this episode of 30 Rock, 3X speed.
And give me a summation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Terrence Malick, 2X speed, like probably just looks like a regular, like an 80s movie.
Exactly. It's
like, oh, this is normal.
Well, sometimes I think when I listen to NPR, normal speed, I mean, double speed, it just sounds like normal talking.
People talking. Yeah, yeah. They're not like, so there's not the pauses and the, yeah, that right. makes sense to me. Older movies, I will say, incredibly slow.
Yeah.
Just long periods with people being like, all right, we've got to head to the store to like meet up for this package drop. And then watch them stand up from that table, walk to the car, get in the car, drive to the store. Right. It's like, yo,
it's realistic.
We then they're like, wait, hold on. I forgot my wallet. Okay, I'll turn around. Right. Hey, make sure you hang your coat up before you go inside. I will.
There are shots in The Godfather of like somebody just walking down a hallway like for long periods. Great movie. And maybe like at the time people needed that breather or something.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah,
just like, sure. man.
And even old comedies, it's hilarious. I remember watching the Marx Brothers, and they had like, they're doing their antic stuff, which is, it's not that antic compared to what happens now. But then they'll do a 5-minute harp solo. Like Harpo will come out and right. actually play the harp for 5 minutes in a wow. comedy movie. And you're like, what the hell is going on?
Well, I mean, that legacy kind of lived on in our 80s and 90s films where like some band inexplicably had a full on song performance in the middle of a film when you're like, what the fuck? Like, why did they do
the
this?
The Blues Brothers
number?
Is, I mean, I've always said that John Belushi is like a little bit puzzling to me because I think because he like Chris Farley's was my favorite like comedic figure growing up. And his whole shtick was like kind of an evolutionary Belushi. But yeah, the Blues Brothers, like when they just like break into long moments of them doing like white guy blues for,
yeah.
for you know, I'm just like, who is this for other than you guys?
Well,
other than the performers who made this movie.
Blame the cocaine, man. Blame the cocaine. You know, be fucking sick, dude. And then we do like a harmonica solo.
But everybody fucking loves that shit. Like people... I know so many people who are like, oh, have you seen the Blues Brothers, though? Oh, you like comedy?
Who are you hanging around? A bunch of cops?
Yeah, it's cops. It's mostly cops. It's the cops that I play cards with. Lori, what's something you think is underrated?
I guess, well, if I'm going to go sports-wise, let's say swimming is underrated. You know, as an Olympic sport, synchronized swimming is underrated.
Yeah.
It's absolutely my favorite thing. It's so beautiful and difficult. And anytime you post a clip, someone posts the clip of Martin Short and Harry Shearer from SNL.
Yeah, yep,
and it's like, guys, can these athletes just do one Olympic right. one yeah. Olympics without having to see that clip, please?
Right.
It is. I mean, it's iconic. But it's one of those things, too. I remember the second you try, that's when you have respect for synchronized swimmers because you're like, oh, yeah. okay, what they're doing under, well, okay, I can stay inverted underwater. And then you're like fucking flailing because you can't do like those like micro balance paddles that they do
yes.
with like their hands. And yeah, respect.
Not
to
only
the,
that, but they all have to do them exactly the same. So,
right.
you know, there'll be eight of them and their hands are right next to each other and they can't mess up and their legs have to stay, their feet have to, you know, meet at the top. You can have 1 foot, you know, one person's feet higher than the other. So
right.
It's so hard. The team version of it, you know, just the individual stuff on its own is really difficult too. But man.
Is there individual, like, water dancing kind of thing?
No. It used to be like synchronized with the music. That's what they meant. But like,
oh right, got it.
No, I mean like individually learning to do all those skills, and then there's eight of you together.
Yeah,
learning to do it so that you're as one.
Right,
really
right.
Holy shit! There's eight of them.
There, I think. I think
like at the beginning of Austin Powers.
I'm trying to remember. It seems like at least 6 to 8 on the team.
Wow.
The team part.
That's
yeah.
unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That shit might as well be like a magic trick to me. I'm just like, there's something yeah. I don't understand because that is looks completely impossible to me.
Yeah.
It is really yeah. impressive. Synchronized diving.
Yeah.
That was
oh, yeah.
pretty fun. That's like very meditative to just like watch people
yeah.
do that over and over again. I got into like the last Olympics. I would just like sit there and watch that for like an hour straight.
Yeah, that's very cool looking. I like when they let these little sneaky sports in the Olympics, you know?
Yeah, right.
You're like, wait, that's
somebody made up 4 years ago.
Someone did by accident when they did it at the same time as your friend.
Yeah, it got invented like when somebody was trying to break a Guinness Book of World Records. They're just like trying to, like, I don't know, maybe most dives together.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because what? Cool, in 2028, we're going to have flag football, aren't we, in the LA Olympics? So
is that right?
Yeah, flag football. It. Yeah.
Wild.
It's out there. So, and everyone's like, America, you better clean the fuck up.
I mean, that's what kids are playing these days, I feel like. Like, young kids aren't playing, like, Pop Warner football, at least not the ones who grow up in New York City. Like, I have nephews who just play like flag football. That's the version of football that they play.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, which makes sense to me.
A lot of cautionary tales out there for banging your fucking skull over and over and, not being able to like navigate your own neighborhood. Did you ever see that one, that like CTE documentary? There's like the one soccer player, this woman who just headed the ball so many times, like she needed like GPS to get around her town. Because it was just affecting so many things like that. And that's when I was like, wow.
I read about her, but I didn't know that documentary. That's terrible. Is that ever going to get better, or is she just permanely?
I'm not sure. Like, did not feel hopeful. It was sort of like, it was sort of covering like all kinds
so
of sort of contact.
Ending.
It was just like it was sort of showing many different contact sports athletes and just sort of the varying degrees in which like these like repetitive head impacts kind of like were affecting people. Cause it doesn't seem like an across the board thing with heading the soccer ball. At least I didn't know about that, but that was like the first time I saw it. And I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah. Hey, he got his bell rung. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's all. He just got his bell rung. Get back up there, man.
Back up there, man.
This kid can take a lick and keep on ticking.
Those stars you're seeing, that's your future, kid, when you're a superstar. Lean into it.
Oh, man. It's so brutal.
Yeah.
By the way, I can't navigate my neighborhood without GPS, but that's another story. we'll talk about that another time. Maybe I need a documentary crew following me around. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back.
We're back.
And this Taylor Swift story just won't quit. That people have some theories as to how the Chiefs made it to the Super Bowl. I mean, the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, they've made it only 4 of the last 5 Super Bowls. How could they have possibly gotten here?
I was going to say, I'm not an NFL fan, but like at the beginning of the season, would it have been absolutely absurd to think that the Chiefs would have gotten close to being in the Super Bowl?
No, they would have been the favorite or one of the favorites. So they won the fucking championship last year.
Exactly. That's like, I love that they're like, yo, man, this whole fucking shit's engineered. So we touched on the frantic screamings of the right after the Chiefs booked their ticket to the Super Bowl. And, you know, we talked about all these conspiracies that came out. Vivek Ramaswamy was like, you'll see this completely fake propped up engineered duo to help Joe Byron. You'll see the impact it'll have in a few months. And now it's only gotten like more momentum since then. I thought it would just be like, okay, in passing, like you just want to say something about the fear of Taylor Swift. But on Newsmax, they really went to an interesting level with a combination of satanic panic and anti-Semitism, George Soros boogeyman kind of shit. Alison Steinberg, who has a show on Newsmax, regurgitated basically a combination of Ramaswamy's tweet, like almost word for word, which is very weird. I was like, you're saying the Vivek Ramaswamy tweet, but pretending, passing it off as your own words. And also a combination of like the debunked Pentagon, NATO psyop where Taylor Swift was seen as an asset that we also talked about a couple weeks ago, where that was merely like just not even, it was hypothetical about how a celebrity would use their influence on the internet. And I think they also talked to you some Game of Thrones characters as an example. But anyway, let's just allow her to first let people know how, like, what's really going on here? What are the Democrats really trying? What's their end game here with all this Taylor Swift crap?
Guys buy and can't seem to turn off. The question is, with the wide open border and millions of illegals pouring in daily, the stealing at the ballot boxes and censoring conservative news and Republican incumbents being removed from the ballot and financing Nikki Haley and so on, why do the powers that be need this dynamic duo to sway the vote? Don't they have enough dirty tricks up their sleeves as it is? Think about it. Wow. If Taylor Swift is really owned by Soros, we might actually have a rare chance to unite against him, using Taylor Swift as the Trojan horse. Instead of pushing the alphabet mafia and murdering of babies to her fans, she should be warning about the dangers of the corrupt elites.
Anyway, goes on there.
Wow.
This all has to do with the fact that like Soros apparently was like, or his one of his companies was an investor in buying her catalog.
Yeah, and what's crazy is that Taylor Swift also posted something once that was kind of dog whistling about Soros, and people were like, oh man.
Like, Taylor, and why didn't they show that clip?
Yeah, like, she's like, on your side, kind of.
She knows what's up. We
she
just
knows
need her to
about the New World Order.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, what exactly, you know, that was her take. And then Greg Kelly, who we also talked about a couple, like, I think last week when Trump had misidentified Nikki Haley as Nancy Pelosi. And he was like, actually, he was deploying his senility tactically to highlight Pelosi's role in January 6th and really spun that shit. He's trying a more, as I would say, Christ-based attack on Taylor Swift and why she needs to be ignored, or at least people need to be warned about, you know, H-E double hockey sticks if you go down this road with Taylor.
I kind of have a problem, though, with the hardcore Taylor Swift fans. They are totally over the top worshiping this woman. Have you seen any of the pictures of her in concert? I wouldn't go myself. I don't do that kind of thing anymore. But I think what they call it is
what does that mean?
They're elevating her to an idol, idolatry. This is a little bit what idolatry, I think, looks like. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to do that. In fact, if you look it up in the Bible, it's a sin. So I don't like that.
You're not supposed to do that.
I like how he just lost the train of thought.
He just
so...
He acts like he just invented the term like pop idol there. Like, right. Or he just heard it for the first time. Like, we've been
I don't know. I'm really making a lot of sense to me. Like,
wow.
You fear that. Yeah. Are you worried about the state of your soul in eternity, Molly?
Well, it's like pop idols. And then I was like, wow, worshiping false idols.
Yeah.
Really?
Go on.
Damn,
son. Go on, Greg Kelly. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, sir, y'all worship at the altar of Donald Trump.
Well, it's also funny that they're like, yeah, normally we like football, but now.
Yeah. We love the racist name, the problematically named football team from Missouri.
Right.
And the white guy.
They're like, this Kansas City team with the racist name is too woke.
Right.
Ugh. Right. I think they're right to connect this to idolatry and the idea that Taylor Swift and like big stars have come to replace. We've talked about this idea before, but like the size and fervor with which people are devoted to their favorite musicians. Like we saw a bunch of people like driving their favorite musician to like number one, like voting. Basically just like playing their songs over and over again as a form of devotion to, like, I think it was Britney Spears over the weekend.
And Nicki,
but
too.
Like, that is a new, yeah, and then Nicki, obviously.
Yeah, but
and
look, Jesus, Shapiro. Fans of Jesus are the original Barbs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, but that has gone down and as more and more people identify as, like, no religion, this is kind of what has come in to replace it, like, Star Wars fandom, Taylor Swift fandom. And I don't think they're wrong. I just think they're wrong to be
demoralized,
so upset about it, because right. They're doing the exact same thing with Donald Trump.
People shouldn't worship like famous people, but they're like, you're worshiping the wrong famous people.
Yeah. Worship this fuckface, please.
Right. You worship our...
Yeah. No, I know, because I saw people too being like, what? I'm shocked. Why don't MAGA people love Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, the all-American prom queen and king kind of thing? But, you know, it's also Travis Kelce did a vaccine commercial.
You mean Mr. Pfizer?
He's Mr. Pfizer.
That's what they call him, yeah.
So they do think this is kind of a brand alignment. Now, I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat here.
Go ahead.
There are people who do think the Taylor and Travis thing is sort of a PR stunt.
Sure.
They're moving really fast.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Well, here, I'll tell you my real opinion, my non-crazy real opinion.
Okay.
Is that she's trying to get back at her ex-boyfriend.
Which one?
She was in a relationship. No, it's Joe Alwyn, the British guy.
Oh, okay.
She was in a relationship, not the racist guy. She was in a relationship. That was her first attempt to get back at the boyfriend. She was in a relationship for 6 years that she thought, I think, was going to culminate in marriage, and then instead, he dumped her, and she's very hurt, but she's also Taylor Swift. So she's like, I'm going to use my huge public platform to make him feel bad. And then instead, I think it's sort of maybe making that ex-boyfriend think he made the right decision because he was the one who didn't like all the publicity stuff
right.
that goes along with the Taylor Swift circus. And I think she's kind of acting out what she would like to be happening in her personal life, and her and Travis Kelce are kind of...
Oh, shit.
Because, like, it makes sense. Everybody, like, just everybody, seeing all these Taylor Swift fans, like, freaking out about them kissing on the field,
right,
you know,
right.
after the game, and being like, he's gonna propose!
Yeah.
When the Chiefs win, he's gonna propose on the field. And then somebody else was like, y'all, they've been dating for 4 months.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You know? And like, I do think her whole thing is this kind of fantasy image of, like, you know, falling in love and being the, like, the perfect all-American gal. But like, she's got to know on some level that, like, you can't marry somebody you've only been dating for 4 months, even if America wants you to.
Yeah. That's already like, we already know what that album sounds like. Like rushing it after 4 months kind of shit.
But that just seems like a thing you do after you've been in a long ass relationship that you thought you were going to be settled down. And then you're like, okay, I'm ready to be fucking settled down. Who's around? Like,
who's the next person?
Yeah. Like, I'm ready to get married. And that guy didn't want to marry me. So like, oh, this football player might want to marry me because as a brand alignment, it makes a lot of sense for both of us. And he's a athlete who might want to retire, and then he could be Mr. Taylor Swift. And he seems to be the first of her boyfriends ever who really likes being Mr. Taylor Swift, which is a big thing she needs in somebody, is that they have to be willing to like be a fucking idiot for her publicly, you know?
For sure.
She doesn't want a private relationship. She wants a public relationship, and he's a football star.
Yeah. I think that's one of the unique skills that she has, is that she is a public figure, like, to her core, right? She's not, there's no part of her that is like, I'm secretly a private person, but I'm like playing this role. I think that like any feelings she has for him are like tied up with understanding what that would like. I feel like she's camera aware when she's in a room by herself.
Yes, you know? Definitely. And I think she's very insecure. And so she needs everybody to see that a man wants to kiss her in front of everybody, you know?
Right.
I think you don't get that famous unless you're seeking validation. She seems like she's seeking the public's validation of like, yeah, I'm awesome, right? Everybody wants me to be their girlfriend because I'm the best.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with the Republicans too, like it seems like a lot of this, I mean, that analysis, I wish they would do that. They like starting to be like just reading her to be like, that's how they're going to get her to go the other way. They're like, we know what's up, Taylor. Like, you want this to work so bad.
No, I mean, I know what's up, which is I think she wants Joe Alwyn to see these clips of her, like, you know, spinning around on the field, kissing this other guy be like, damn, I fucked up.
Right.
You know,
and he's like English. Right. He's like, there's only one football, love.
Yeah, exactly.
You call it soccer. Yeah, and she's like, do you like this? How's this, Joe?
He did something amazing, which is that on her birthday, when everybody was like expecting him to look, you know, looking to see if he would post something on her birthday, he posted a pro-Palestine thing.
Mm, that was, oh, wow, just because he knew there'd be so much attention.
Joe Alwyn?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, I think he's, you know, because people are also like, oh, he kind of like tamped down that part of her that's like needs the validation all the time. And that's why she was kind of quiet for a few years. And then when they broke up, it's like the part of her that needs that public exposure just went crazy.
Mm.
And
right.
And it's happened before where she's gotten so overexposed that people are like sick of her. And she's definitely headed that direction again, no matter what. So.
But we just need it to last till November and then go back into the
shadows. Yeah, I mean, if the team loses, if they don't get to the Super Bowl and they don't win the Super Bowl, like that relationship's over.
I know, right? Are people taking prop bets?
She leaves him for the quarterback of the 49ers.
No, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think she's also doing, I do think this was sort of a publicist setup in the first place, you know, that they were like, he allegedly was trying to get a famous girlfriend all year and was hitting up Megan Thee Stallion, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah. Like he was allegedly trying to become famous, has this publicist. That's why he hosted SNL. He wanted to be a name brand, and dating Taylor Swift, incredible way for everyone to do that. So I think even if they are a little bit playing it up for the cameras, like they seem to like each other enough, you know?
A plus to that publicist. Jesus.
I think it's like it's been pointed out that they both date, like they're not each other's usual types.
Sure.
She dates little British guys.
I mean, Molly Lambert, one of the great profilers and thinkers on celebrity, we're so lucky to have you for this conversation. I did not know about the Travis Kelce, the idea that Travis Kelce was like on a Make Me Famous tour and even considered dating Megan Thee Stallion for a while. Is that like Dumas or where is that coming from?
I mean, yeah, basically, you know.
You have your sources. Yeah.
I have my sources.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, people said there's somebody else he was trying to date. People said basically he was looking to become a household name. He's got a podcast, as we all know, with his brother. He's trying to become a sports personality who's more, you know, who's famous on top of being an athlete so that when he's not in the NFL anymore, he can be like a famous sports personality who's on TV. That's why he hosted SNL. Because he's, you know, wants people to think, oh, he's funny for an athlete. He's kind of cool for an athlete. He's smart for a football player. Honestly, his podcast is pretty funny.
Well, I mean, yeah, look.
I haven't listened to it.
Jack, you simply must.
I like to dip into athlete podcasts. I listen to Tom Brady's podcast once because I just how I imagined it in my head. It was being Tom Brady being like, Tom Brady, brain don't work so good.
Right.
Mouth work, fine. But, you know, he talked about, he said stuff about football. He kind of had, I was like, oh, he's got, I guess I've never heard him talk. He just looks like such a dummy that I assumed he would sound like one.
Right.
Travis Kelce is like, I'm cool for a football player.
I'm not like the other players.
He's not like the other players. He's funny. He was good on SNL also. But like, it's definitely like, you know, there's managers and agents involved in this. That part's not made up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because I mean, like, you know that publicists and stuff will be like, here's a menu of options to keep you in the news. Which one would you like to do? You know what
I mean? Yeah, and I think her first attempt to get back at the ex-boyfriend, which was dating Matty Healy from the 1975, like, didn't work and blew up in everybody's face, kind of, because he kept saying out-of-pocket things. Unclear how their relationship ended. Either she dropped him because of the Ice Spice stuff, or he just disappeared because the heat got too hot. Mm-hmm. And then comes this opportunity to date a football player who is very famous.
All American,
and she's obsessed with looking like she can keep a man. That's like her main, because people that are, she's never been in therapy, famously. And I saw, you know, people that are her fans saying, oh, well, you know, she's broke, got out of this 6-year relationship. She should really take some time to work on herself before she gets in a serious relationship again. She should, like, you know, be with herself, see what she wants. And she doesn't do that. She doesn't fucking do that.
She just conquers the world.
She just needs a boyfriend because she needs everyone to know that she's like hot and desirable. And that's the way that she conveys it to the world, because she's like the most heteronormative person on earth. You know, she's like, no one will know I'm hot unless I'm dating a big hot football player.
Just big chunk of beef, man. Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think she's like addicted to the idea of being in love to an extent that maybe it doesn't even really matter who the guy is, you know, which I think is a lot of people are just kind of like, well, I want to be married. So who's going to marry me?
Right. I mean, just this, like, with the whole obsession with the right on Taylor, it's like, really, I'm still trying to figure out, like, what the fuck is going
on. That's what's funny is, like, her fans are like, wow, you know, fairy tale love. She never gives up on love. And now she and Travis are in love. Right wing people are like, she's a succubus. She's an unmarried woman in her 30s and she's all used up and her eggs are dying. That's what I saw from the right wing, was being like, she encourages abortions and he's Mr. Vaccine, and together they're leading people away from the light of Christ over to the dark side.
Yeah, the dark side of wokeism.
And they're like, and they're like, you guys can't use this all-American bullshit. That's our thing.
Right. I mean, a lot of the angst seems to be coming from this poll, too, recently that came out, that said 18% of voters, not just Taylor Swift fans, of voters, said they would probably support whoever Taylor Swift supported. And then it also said that 17% would be put off by a candidate that Swift supported. So, like, on Fox, you're like, well, that just cancels each other out. So we don't have to worry about this. But I mean, whatever. That's there's like this really interesting fear. And like, I feel like this desperation about talking about her, it feels like twofold, right? One is they're hell bent on winning by any means in November. So anything that could introduce any sort of wobble to their confidence is like fucking existential, because they absolutely, like, you see all the fucking think tanks going all in on Project 2025 and being ready to be like, yeah, let's just fucking flip the switch on the dark side, like, this November.
Yeah. And she also used to stay out of it. That was like the thing, was she used to not ever say anything about politics because allegedly her dad is like a Trump voter, you know, and she didn't want to stir the pot. And So then she got attacked from all sides when she wasn't saying anything, where people are like, oh, it's because she's secretly Trump voter, or it's because she is a Biden voter but doesn't want her Trump voter fans to know that because it'll affect album sales. But
doesn't seem to have done anything.
She came out and said a couple.
She capitulated. Yeah, she said. Yeah, she says as little as she possibly can for it not to be a thing.
Yes.
Right.
But you can't say nothing and have it not be a thing.
She knows a lot of her fans are these kind of like Christian Karens, too, where she's like, they don't need to know that I'm like an adult city girl who believes in abortion, because then they won't maybe buy my records. But I think they will buy her records anyway. And I think she did say something a little bit pro-choice and like maybe even a little bit pro-Palestine. So
do we think there's never been a it's always seemed like very out of touch to me that the Democratic Party is so, I don't even know if it's the Democratic Party or if it's just the mainstream media that emphasizes like, well, the Democrats have Katy Perry like performing at their, you know, campaign event. So like,
well, that's part of it. It's like advantage. The way that they're just completely putting everything on pop culture and being like, it has always been like idiotic, like the Pokemon Go to the polls, like, no, give us healthcare. Give us fucking healthcare.
Right.
The fact that they're like, no, we need to get a team of famous people to endorse this candidate because that's all anybody cares about. It feels very much like the, you know, playlist politics where it's just like, no, nobody cares what's on your playlist. Give us any actionable change that'll improve people's lives because everybody's fucking struggling and miserable.
Yeah.
Which maybe is a good segue over to Elmo.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think just like the last thing, like, I think this is also just a perfect opportunity for the right wing media to not talk about all the L's Trump's been taking in court recently, because like they don't want to talk about the $83 million judgment that was like awarded to E. Jean Carroll. And now this week we're going to find out what he's going to owe for all the fraudulent BS with the fucking Trump organization. And Letitia James is seeking $370 million. So this dude could be close to $500 million in the hole.
Yeah, but he might still be president. They might use that to be like, oh, they're coming for him because he's too powerful. You know, they're trying to take him down and now he's the underdog, which is like how he operates, is convincing a bunch of privileged people that they're the underdog.
Right.
I mean, he kind of is, you know, if you really think about it. You know, I've been sitting with that. He's a fighter.
He's down, but never out.
It's till the end. But yeah, I think, again, it's just there's always like an aversion to talk about like whatever's happening with him in a negative sense. I feel like a lot of this Swift stuff, like while a lot of people are like, oh, they're so fucking scared of Taylor Swift. I'm like, they also don't want to talk about the news, too. So this is like a good thing just to be like, you know, getting people on like an anti-Swift thing.
Oh, yeah. So maybe it is a psyop, but from the right.
Yeah, seriously.
That would be very them to like be screaming about a psyop that they are actually conducting as they're screaming about the psyop. Yeah, that's kind of their move. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about how everyone's doing. We'll be right back.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus
Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back.
We're back.
And, you know, we've been we've been doing this daily show for a long time and, you know, covering the incredibly consistent energy pushing back against ideas like defund the police and abolitionism coming from places like the New York Times, you know, places that coming into adulthood, I had been told were like liberal or progressive. And it feels like there's a lot of parts of the mainstream media that have kind of pushed past the idea of defunding the police. Like it's settled law among people that like defund the police was bad politics. Like everybody heard James Carville say it and they're like, well, I guess that's true.
If that old swamp creature says it.
That old snake say it then.
I don't like that. Yeah, that's a backwards idea.
But how, I'd just be curious to hear from you on how are you seeing progress made in the fight for abolishing the current system of like policing and human caging? Maybe just talking about like, what is abolitionism currently as you see it? And what are the areas that abolitionists are currently working on?
I mean, yeah, I would say it's incredibly broad. Abolitionism, you know, people have multiple understandings of it, but the one I work from is abolitionism is the fight to end enslavement, incarceration, and exploitation of people that is based in the model of chattel slavery. Mm. And so what we are in is a continuation of that, of chattel slavery and that exploitation of people and the imprisonment and enslavement of people. And we see it in the ways in which our systems have built. Now that is broad, because we actually see that in our mental health system. We see this in our quote-unquote child welfare system, and we see it in our incarceration systems, in our school systems. And so there are a lot of different places to fight this and say, you know, people have the right to their own autonomy. We don't have the right to say that only certain people deserve freedom, deserve liberation, deserve a second chance, deserve to learn and grow and change and be a part of community. And that we will look at the problems we face as a community and with the fundamental belief that as a community, we can solve it, because these problems don't exist in a vacuum. If these problems are rooted in society and community and our systems, then we can solve them. And I think that that is fundamental to this work. And so, you know, a lot of people will try to fight that and say, you know, with fear mongering, well, if there's no cops tomorrow, what are you going to do? As if there isn't a process, isn't a system. And often I would say, you know, that fear mongering glazes over how incredibly brutal the reality is, right? Which is that, you know, we have a system that does nothing to deter harm or crime, that is stealing away large percentages of our population, that is leading to the deaths of hundreds, if not thousands, of people by police officers every year, that is leading to the thefts of children from Black, Brown, and Indigenous homes, that is leading to the forced treatment and incarceration of mentally ill people. And we're not safer. We're no safer, right? And so this idea that trying something new would be worse, how much
then
worse?
What?
Yeah.
Than this?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a system that, like, insert, you know, exports brutality into the world that we live in. Like,
right. And reinforces societal inequities that create brutality, that create harm and violence. And, you know, and I think that's why we're force-fed all of these, you know, stories and cop shows of, if it weren't for a cop, you know. And I think one of the most important things that was said to me by Jhenaia Khan years back, we were talking and they said, you know, cops can't prevent crime. They can only respond after it's happened. Mm. And yet we act as if that's the opposite. Like you can't, you know, unharm someone with a police officer. And if anything, they're showing up and creating a whole new level of crime. And so this idea that it would make us safer just doesn't make any sense. And so I think it's important to recognize like that there's something so deeply hopeful and beautiful in abolitionism in that fundamentally it believes in people. Like it believes that we can actually solve this, that no one is irredeemable, that we can look at societal issues and address them and change the way that we relate to each other, that we can heal each other. And that yes, we can address safety at the same time. And it doesn't mean it's perfect, but oh my goodness, what we have right now is causing more harm than good. And so that means that there's so many different ways in which we can do this work and you can pick different spots. And it can seem like we'll never get there, right? That we're not going to have a time where there aren't policing. But every time that we can kind of remove the tasks given to policing and carceral systems, every time that we can dismantle pieces of it and strengthen alternatives, we're doing really important abolitionist work. And we can do that and still say, this shouldn't exist. So I always say that, like, it is abolitionist to say, I don't want cops in schools. It's abolitionist to say that, you know, people need to be given alternatives to incarceration. It is abolitionist to say that people shouldn't be given, you know, forced treatment for mental health issues against their will. It is abolitionist to do all of these. And I can say that, work for it, and saying, I don't want any cops. You know, I can say that, right? While also working towards these things that are available to me right now.
Mm. I mean, I think with, especially when it relates to policing, right? And we, like you said, the status quo is violence, is dysfunction, is increased harm. It's not solution based. It's not about identifying root causes. Yet so many people are so frightened to make the change that like the fear instantly turns to, like, passionate defenses of the status quo. So then the next thing that you get offered, especially from legislators, politicians, are reforms, right? And we talk a lot about reform is not, you're just putting a different coat of paint on the same problem. How do you sort of like balance, obviously, the need for these kinds of like deeper changes, or at least different kind of emphasis alongside like the reforms? Because a lot of the times you get these debates now where people are like, well, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. They're saying they'll tell cops to use a slightly lighter baton or something. And we're supposed to be like, oh, okay, yes, sure. But like, how do we sort of, in a world where people are so focused and able to say like, no, like a lot of our crime is because of desperation or lack of support. That's what we need to be doing. I don't want to hear about anything unless, I mean, talk to me when we're getting rid of qualified immunity or something like that. How should people sort of like look at this balance of understanding what glacial, incremental sort of reform can do versus trying to, like, for lack of a better word, hope for something revolutionary, something different, something that's sort of upending the status quo?
That's a great question. And it is something that we talk about in the book. It's so vital that we understand the difference between like true liberation, liberatory work, and harm reduction. Mm-hmm. And recognize what's neither, because a lot of what we say is police reform is neither harm reduction or liberatory work. And we have to say, at least give us some harm reduction, right?
Right.
And so it's really important to listen to the people most impacted by it and the people who are actually, you know, experts on this from the perspective of communities harmed, right? And say, no, this doesn't work. And we know this doesn't work. And listen to that and be really, really clear, because people will sell you anything and call it revolutionary. And then they'll label, you know, harm reduction as like this huge attack on the system. And we're not even getting to like the meat of it. Harm reduction matters. Absolutely matters, because the truth is if we have these long-term big goals, we have to be alive to get there.
Right.
But that means we have to be honest about what it is. And so, you know, when, first of all, if it's offered to us by the system, throw it away.
Pass. Yeah.
Throw it away.
Right.
We've got an idea.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We don't want that, right? You got to listen. We have to listen and listen to the communities who've been building alternatives, right? Because communities, when we build alternatives, some of those are revolutionary, some of those are harm reduction, right? And so we already kind of know what direction works and what direction doesn't. And so when it comes to issues that are as big as like policing and say we would hate to, you know, we don't want this system here. You know, harm reduction, you know, would be things like one, you know, getting police out of officers out of schools, right? The system still exists, but we don't need the officers in schools. Studies have shown time and time again that, you know, it leads to an increase in arrests of Black and Brown and Indigenous and disabled students with no actual reduction in harm. And it's not, and whether they're, you know, arrested has no ties to violence in schools, drugs in schools, or anything like that. It's just, do you have Black students? Do you have cops? Now we have more Black students arrested.
Right.
So we know it doesn't work, right? So harm reduction would be, you know, getting them out. And that isn't, you know, it's an abolitionist practice in that it is, you know, getting them out, but it's not getting rid of the system. Other ones would be, you know, before you start referring, making calls, kicking kids out of school and getting them in this, in these pipelines, you know, what, who oversees that, right? Who approves that? What records do you have? What other things are you trying first? Those are all things that are really important to look at while saying, while recognizing if the system still stays in place, it's not getting rid of the system. And so we can work towards that, push towards that. Don't accept anything that re-entrenches the system. Mm-hmm. And so retraining always re-entrenches the system. Retraining is never going to be a harm reduction. It's just putting more money into a system and asking, you know, and we've shown that they don't come out, you know, gentler, kinder, more understanding of community. They come out with more police officers, you know, right. And they come out with more levels of excuses for why they're doing what they're doing. And so just listening to community on that is really, really vital. But when it comes to every day, and if you're looking at smaller things we can do, you know, if you live in an area that has cash bail programs, getting rid of cash bail is one of the most vital things you can do right now, right?
Right.
You know, in Washington, here we have like pay to stay, where people actually have to pay for their incarceration if they work out a deal and they want to go in early so that they aren't away from their family for 3 years and maybe 6 months. They have to pay for every day that they're in there. And so, you know, things like that are wild. Classist, racist, and getting rid of that doesn't get rid of the system, but it's also a really, really important step that we can take right now to reduce the numbers of people caught up in this in these systems and how long they're caught up in them. And that gives us what we need, the strength we need in community to keep fighting.
Just how do you think about the pushback from the mainstream media? Just that's been something that I've tried to get my head around. Trying to picture the editorial meetings at these, you know, major journalistic institutions where they decide, let's go with this story, where the police are the only source for the information. Do you think of that as being put in place by powers like architecturally structured to put this power in place? Because I also feel like there's also some desire for that narrative coming from below, also like from the readership. And I'm just wondering, like, how you think about that. Does that inform how you approach people when you're trying to talk to them about, you know, the carceral system and, you know, things like that? There's this big infrastructure of power and money that is like trying to keep these institutions in place, but then there's also people who are just like really quick to believe the bullshit stories. And I don't know if it's because that's what they've always had, if it's because, you know, it preserves their feeling of superiority and protection, but just interested to hear your thoughts on that.
I think it's a mix of things, right? So one, I do think that if people were, you know, if the reality of systemic oppression were laid bare for all people and the way in which people have been made to participate in the oppression of others was laid bare for all people, that people would decline to participate in that, especially if they were able to see how it impacts their own personal safety. No one is safe in a police state, whether or not we've been told we are, even if you have privilege. Only the very select few are, and often that is only for a limited time. But you know, that is something that people don't want. And so that is often kept from the people who are made to participate most, right? people with the most privilege. The reality of how unsafe we are is something that many of us can't escape, you know, and which is why we're often the first and the most outspoken about trying to change it. But that unsafety exists for everyone, and that culpability exists, and people want to avoid it, and people have been protected from it. And they're, you know, their bellies are soft to it. You know what I mean? Like they haven't built up that tolerance for it and have been told that they would fall apart if they knew the reality, that they couldn't handle it. And they're fed a constant diet of fear. When we look at our media and this constant fear of the other, fear of this danger that is pumped into people, right? We look at these shows where it's just this random person gets a thirst for blood and is out murdering people. Who's going to come help you? Or, you know, like this, you know, gang violence where the gang leaders are just soulless creatures who popped out of nowhere and they're going to take over your city if you don't, you know, have this. People are fed that. And people who don't have that firsthand experience with the reality of these systems and are living this completely alternate reality and are being told no other reality exists, that, you know, you would feel comfortable calling a cop knowing they could help you get your cat out of a tree or whatever, and you'd be safe, and everyone would, because that's your reality. Challenging that makes the world terrifying, right? It can make the world seem really terrifying. Challenging how you've been made a part of it can seem really terrifying. It can make you feel really powerless in a way that, you know, many of us have never had the luxury of avoiding. And people will put up walls around that. And it has little to do with intent. It has, you can say you care, you know, and you love, but if you're not actively challenging these ideas and willing to sit with that discomfort, then you'll have a problem. And people don't want to hear it. Right. People really don't want to hear it. They don't want it to land on their doorstep. If they are thinking about things like police brutality, they want the name of the one cop that they can yell at and blame. Because if it's a system and they're, you know, paying taxes into that system, if they've been supporting that system, if they voted for the candidate who said they'll bring law and order and safety to their area, knowing that that meant it would increase cops in Black and brown communities, right, then there's a whole level of culpability. And if that thing that they've been pouring money and effort into would endanger their disabled child, they don't want to know. They don't want that. They don't want that reality. And so it's really important that we challenge it while also showing that people are building alternatives. And that like idea that we could build something else is kept from a lot of people who've never had to. And so it's always wild to me when people say, well, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do if someone rapes you? That's the thing people say a lot to me, right? Especially as a woman, people will weaponize that against me. And I'm like, first of all, I'm absolutely a survivor of sexual assault, as many women have been. And please don't do anything. Right. And my healing, my sense of safety came from the practices that like my Black and brown community had to build to try to address this, because we always knew that we weren't going to find safety in the system and we weren't going to find repair in the system. And so, you know, those kind of ideas, these things that are thrown out, erases the fact that right now, the, you know, a large segment of Black, brown, and Indigenous populations, queer and trans populations, absolutely know that they could never find safety in our systems. And they have to build elsewhere, and they have been. But that is completely erased. You know, the ways in which we solve conflict is erased. The ways in which we ensure safety is erased. The way in which we heal each other and ourselves has been erased. And it all comes down to, you have to trust this person with a gun. Nothing else has been done. Nothing else can work. And so media, I think, plays a huge part in that. They're invested in that because, one, they personally don't want to investigate that. And I've talked with editors, you know, as a writer, who don't personally want to investigate it. They want to keep it in a comfortable place for them. But also they have funders who are systemically, you know, invested in this. And there is a real backlash for people publicly taking a stand and saying, we're going to address the real roots of this. People have been made to pay. And I do think that people are afraid of that and afraid of challenging those assumptions.
Yeah. I think one of the most, like, one of sort of inspiring passages for me, or just to kind of put everything into perspective, right? Because we started off being like, revolution just feels like this scary idea. And like, even though I know, like, we need to actually look out for everybody, true liberation is only when every single person is liberated. Like, even if they don't look like me or not part of my community, that there was, I think it was Mariam Kaba, who you were saying, like, what's really put this into perspective was like, it's not about like these big things, right? It's like, I might be butchering the quote, but it's just about taking out, removing just the bricks of like these oppressive systems. It doesn't have to be a wrecking ball type moment, because if everybody's taking a brick out one by one for themselves, shit will start crumbling. There's just no way for something structurally to keep its structural integrity if we're always just kind of picking away at it. And I think that's a really important message for, I think, and I really encourage our listeners to really check your book out, because we are in such a time right now where I feel like everyone feels like they're banging their head against a wall and they're like, I'm seeing this happen right now. Am I like, but we're not doing the right things. And I think it really is an empowering message, A, to see these other stories of people who a lot of are starting from absolute powerlessness and then opening the door to something really, really substantive and really monumental without necessarily that being the initial intention of it, it was more just about advocating for yourself. So I really thank you for putting all of these stories together and your words around it, because as someone who's done like worked from all over the political spectrum, from being a lobbyist to being like in the streets and things like that, I've always sort of grappled with these feelings of like where my power lies or how I can actually exercise that and what it means to be revolutionary or not. And I think it makes it a very accessible way, and I think is very powerful, I think, for people to understand that it's just about these small actions, because they all, like, we have to get out of like this superhero mentality of, I'm like, I'm going to figure it out by myself right now, rather than, can I contribute to a community that's doing well? Can I, from my space, say, you know what, maybe we don't need funding that's contingent upon us interacting with the police to keep our nonprofit going, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I just, again, I feel like, thank you for putting this book out. And yeah, it's really great to just be able to speak with you today. It's just been really eye-opening, and I'm sure our listeners have had the same experience too.
Yeah, truly a pleasure.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye. Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get, but with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.